Joining us this morning, 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. I know things are busy in Olympia. How would you say things are progressing? Do you feel positive? Is there good momentum?
Yeah, I think things are progressing just as expected. We've been spending most of the last 3 weeks in our committees hearing bills. There's a lot of bills introduced. Bills are still being introduced. And the bills need to sort of make their way first through their committees, whether it's a House bill in the House committees or, in my case, Senate bills in our Senate committees. And once those bills start to trickle up out of their committees, we begin to have floor voting sessions in the full Senate. But right now, not too much, but in a few weeks, it'll be kind of hot and heavy with a lot of Senate votes. And I guess things seem positive now, but the reality is, Jeff, there will be a lot of bills this session that I won't support, and I probably won't be able to stop. And those bills will be making their way through the Senate kind of like a steam train. So some of these bills are coming out of the committees, and I know they're stinkers, and we're gonna have to deal with those in a few weeks.
All right. We're hearing a lot of talk about drug possession. What can you tell us about that?
Well, back in 2021, the state Supreme Court issued a Blake decision, and it had to do with whether a person knowingly possesses drugs. And in a way, some people see it as a decriminalization of drugs. But basically, the state Supreme Court struck down Washington's felony drug possession law. And so in response to that, the legislature is trying to figure out, you know, what to do based on that state Supreme Court ruling. So they made this short-term fix, and that fix sunsets in July of 2023. It basically made drug possession just a misdemeanor. And obviously, you know, since that time, drug use has, you know, really increased, crime has increased. And so what can we do to resolve this? What can we do after this short-term fix expires, which is something we're going to need to do as a legislature this session? It is something that there is a lot of bipartisan work on right now. But what's interesting, Jeff, is the opinions across the legislature on both sides of the aisle really differ on what to do. A lot of people want to decriminalize drug possession. Others, like me, think that there are therapeutic court systems that might present some real options for folks, but we do need to have some options that remain in the law and justice system to help bring people the support they need to get the treatment they need. So it's very interesting. I think good people disagree, but in the end, ultimately, everybody needs to get their help, and some people can't get their help any other way, and they're a danger to themselves and their family and others, and the justice system. You know, we need some options, and I don't know if that's a gross misdemeanor or a felony for drug possession. But we do need to do something because drug use is on the rise in Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know some tools have been taken away from our law enforcement folks. Where do we stand on this police pursuit bill?
Yeah, so that was another bill that was approved with these suite of police reforms a couple years ago. I voted against that bill that basically lowered the standard for what police officers could utilize or apply for pursuits increase the standard from reasonable suspicion to a probable cause standard, which is a higher standard. I'd like to see it reduced back to where it was. There's been bills sponsored on both sides of the legislature, House and Senate, to try to bring police pursuits back as an option for law enforcement based on the outcry of communities all across the state since some of these police reform bills have become law and now have been implemented. I support those bills, and I'd like to see those bills come through the process and get to the governor's desk. But what's interesting is one bill, the Senate version is Senate Bill 5352. It's sponsored by Senator John Lubick, who's a retired state patrol trooper. And but recently, a Democrat, and he's a Democrat, but a Democrat chair of the Law and Justice Committee in the Senate had declared last week that she is going to block the police pursuit bills from advancing through a committee. And she was citing statistics that some people questioned the methods that were used for her research, but she was citing that deaths linked to police pursuits are down 73% since the legislature made this policy change. But Democrats and Republicans and a lot of research analysts are questioning and rejecting the methods by which that one person she's citing came to their conclusion. So it's just, it's kind of an interesting process right now related to that.
Well,
one person on the right committee in the right spot could essentially block something that has vast support on both sides of the aisle. And that may be the case this year with that, with the police pursuits bills.
Very interesting perspective on that. All right, we have Senator Patton, who had proposed, I believe it was a 0.06 reduction in the legal limit for alcohol, and that failed. But we've got a new proposal out for 0.05 that seems to be gaining traction as it relates to DUIs. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that bill is another bill that's sponsored by Senator John Levick, who is the retired State Patrol trooper I mentioned. His bill is proposing to lower the threshold for DUI alcohol concentration from 0.08 to 0.05. It went through the Senate Law and Justice Committee, and on that committee, my colleague Senator Patton said, well, rather than going all the way down to 0.05, what if we sort of split the difference, went with a 0.06? He offered that as an amendment, and it did not get accepted. And so now the bill comes before the Senate Transportation Committee, which I serve on, and Senator Levick presented that bill yesterday afternoon, evening, before the Senate Transportation Committee, and there were a lot of advocates in support of that, although some people are not impaired with the say of 0.6 or 0.7, but other people, some people may not be impaired, but other people certainly are. And for me, I do not support drinking and driving in any way, shape, or form. The easiest thing for me, besides any state law, is if people are going to consume alcohol, they shouldn't drive. Because right now in our state, it's a little ambiguous. People say, we have this threshold of 0.08, and it's like, well, you can drink and drive, but don't drink too much. And obviously, once people get drinking, what is too much for what impairs them with their driving is different for everybody. So generally speaking, I support Senator Levick's bill to lower the threshold, but there could be some implications, you know, on hospitality and how law enforcement applies that. But generally speaking, the testimony that we heard yesterday, law enforcement personnel pull people over based on whether they feel that they are impaired, if there's erratic driving and swerving and crossing lanes and those sort of things. And if law enforcement feels that someone's endangering themselves, they go through these field sobriety tests and everything. And then ultimately, you know, they get tested. But people get pulled over if they're impaired. And if they're impaired, they shouldn't be driving. And if they're impaired and then this law passes and they're at a 0.07 or 0.06, then they're going to have to face their DUI penalties in that regard.
Bit of a curveball for you, if I may, this morning. We just heard, I believe yesterday or early this morning, that State Superintendent Chris Reichdahl is floating this idea of, hey, free lunch for all. And as a ranking member of early learning and K-12 education, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, interesting, Jeff, that bill did move through the Senate committee. I did not vote for it. Some of us, we're kind of trying to figure out how we should respond to this. I voted without a recommendation, but in part, I don't support the concept because it's very costly and we have tremendous learning loss and other challenges academically all across our state in our K-12 system. And I don't think the state should be investing $200 million a year, whatever this is going to cost, to make the school lunches free for everybody when a lot of the students don't need that financial support. I'd rather the dollars be better used for tutoring, to pick up, to make some academic gains after COVID. I mean, really, Jeff, the situation that I see just looking at it broadly is that the scope of services our school districts are providing is dramatically expanding. And it used to be that academics was the primary function of our school system. And now it seems that it's academics and social emotional support, childcare, nutritional needs. And it's not just lunch. There's multiple meals served. Some school districts serve 3 meals each day. And some school districts are already getting into healthcare and some of these other things. And the reality is the cost of providing educational services has almost doubled in the last 10 years. And people want to say, well, what are you doing to fully fund education? Well, we're not honestly going to be able to fully fund education if we're trying to use the education system to meet all the needs in our communities. And so it's really getting challenging. It's a big question, but in the short of it is, it's really getting challenging to differentiate where a school district's responsibilities end and a family and community's responsibilities begin. And I believe a lot of the services we're trying to provide in our school system should be provided by communities. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, we do have a free and reduced lunch program throughout our state, and that helps meet the needs of the students who either can't afford any lunch or can't afford their full school meals program. So there is that program that exists. So it's hard to vote against it, but I'm not convinced that kids are going hungry necessarily, mm-hmm. because there's already those options that exist.
Yeah, we see other states who are actually taking the steps to allow the dollars to follow the student instead of the school district. That could be an interesting situation.
Right, right. And I will say, too, and this may be the case even in a Lake Chelan school district or certainly a Manson school district, but there are sometimes enough students as a percentage of your student population in your district that are already meeting the free and reduced lunch threshold, that the school districts just say, well, we're going to provide free meals to everyone. And I can understand and support that, because as a school district, it actually is a administrative burden to be collecting and processing and doing all the accounting for the $3 here and $3 there for the students that, you know, the smaller percentage of the students that don't meet that threshold. So mm-hmm. if school districts want to do that on their own, I fully support it. If the state wants to try to invest $200 million right now each year to try to make that work, I think post-COVID and all the academic learning loss that has occurred throughout the state, those dollars are better invested in academic services right now for students in need.
All right. Wow. Lots of good topics to cover there this morning, and more to come as we move through this legislative session. 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's always good.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate it. Take care.
We'll look forward to talking to you next week again. Senator Brad Hawkins in session in Olympia and joining us for a community connection this morning.